Ladies and gentlemen, jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman Report. It's my show now. No, I'm kidding. Joe Hagman here, your co-host, along with Doug Hagman, who will be joining us in just a few minutes. Got a great show lined up for you today. Got a lot we're going to get into with a number of guests. We have Brandon House, who's going to be joining us in a matter of minutes. And we got a lot we're going to get into with Brandon about the information warfare, some media stuff, as well as some interesting news about Venezuela and Antifa. And again, we're going to be getting into information warfare with Brandon. Then, following Brandon, we have a very special guest, Hugh Clark. He is a served in the United States Navy, and he was a member of the Honor Guard that took President Kennedy's body to Arlington Cemetery for burial. And we're going to go back to that day of the Kennedy assassination and go through with Hugh his experience and what he witnessed on that day. Then in hour three, we have each and every Tuesday, Stan Deo. He will be joining us in the third hour. And we got a lot to talk about, a lot of news going on. Folks, if you've been paying attention to the storm, Hurricane Harvey, they are reporting that over 52 inches of rain has fallen in Houston, which is, it's smashed all records. It's, this is, you know, an historic, catastrophic event. It seems that the death toll is relatively low. I know that 8 people were confirmed dead by today, and there was a family of 6 missing that they believe had drowned, and that's very low for what I believe is one of the worst floods we've seen in U.S. history. Now, it's not, obviously, when I say worst flood, I don't mean the death toll or anything like that. I'm talking about the devastation and the amount of water that we are seeing. In Katrina, I believe 1,800 or more people were killed as a levee broke after Hurricane Katrina hit, taking many by surprise. Here, we knew that this was coming. But we do have some issues with dams and levees. There have been conflicting reports that a levee had broken. And that report from the local news, they said that that's not the case. But we have 2 dams in Houston, in the city of Houston, that when the town was built and when these dams and reservoirs were built, there were no other houses or it was pretty much a non-populated area. Now you have hundreds of thousands of homes that have filled in all these areas around these reservoirs, and this is where we're seeing the flooding from today, as they're saying that the rivers and streams will not peak for another 2 days, meaning reach its maximum threshold for water, or the highest levels of water. We won't see that for 2 days, and the 2 reservoirs that are there, the Attix Reservoir, and then there's another one right next to it. But when this system was designed, it was not designed with homes and businesses all around the reservoirs. It was kind of far away on the eastern side of the city. Well, now it's a very populated area, and it could be disastrous if the reservoirs were to collapse or fail. But either way, water at the Attix Reservoir, which is 19 miles west of downtown, went over the top of the 108-foot spillway for the first time in history. Now, the spillway is 108 feet. The highest level it's ever reached was 100 feet. And now it is at 85 feet. So we have water that is being released from the reservoir in order to help minimize the flooding, is now not being released fast enough to where the water is spilling over. So you have this situation that's ongoing that is, as local meteorologists say, is something we've never seen before. And they say the water is going to continue to increase for the next few days, and to get out now and to leave immediately if you live around those dams. One of the really interesting feel-good stories about this Hurricane Harvey is what some are calling the Cajun Navy. Either way, it's a group of civilians who have come together to help rescue their fellow citizens. And I think this really speaks to the, you know, when we talk about what is America, I think this speaks to, you know, the true nature of Americans and America. When we see disasters like this happen, people coming together, whether it's giving, donating supplies or money, or mobilizing in, with their small boats and water vehicles in order to go rescue their neighbors and fellow citizens, this spirit of community and love for each other, that's what America's all about. And no matter how much the media continues to try to, you know, divide us along racial lines, political lines, economic lines, this is what America at its heart is all about. Folks, if you go on Drudge, you will see a whole laundry list of headlines about the flood. Flood of a lifetime, you know, new records. Many shelters are at capacity already. Louisiana is starting itself to flood in certain areas. We have law enforcement. They are finding themselves facing off with looters. And that's pretty crazy. People obviously looting. And, you know, there's a whole host of on every cable news station and on much of the internet, you can find updates, live stream, cameras of Houston, the reservoirs, the rescue efforts. It's all there. But keep these people in your prayers, as this is going to be an ongoing disaster for a number of weeks and months, I imagine, for many of the worst affected areas. One more headline. Folks, go to HagmanReport.com. Bookmark the site. There's a lot of interesting stories up there. One of the latest ones we just posted, FBI says lack of public interest in Hillary emails justifies withholding documents. Hillary Clinton's case isn't interesting enough to the public to justify releasing the FBI's files on her, the Bureau said this week, in rejecting an open records request by a lawyer seeking to have the former Secretary of State punished for perjury. Ty Clevenger, the lawyer, has been trying to get Mrs. Clinton and her personal lawyers disbarred for their handling of her official emails during the time as Secretary of State. He's met with resistance among lawyers, and now his request for information from the FBI's files has been shut down. You have not sufficiently demonstrated that the public's interest in disclosure outweighs personal privacy interests of the subject, according to FBI Records Management Section Chief David Hardy. It is crazy that they're using this defense to keep the public eyes off of her emails. And the lawyer says, I'm just stunned. This is exactly what I would have expected if Mrs. Clinton had won the election. But she didn't. It looks like the Obama administration is still running the FBI. That comment is right on the money. It looks like the Obama administration is not only still running the FBI, but much of the White House. We have with us our guest, Brandon House. Brandon, it's great to have you back on. I know we got a lot to get into tonight. We're going to start with Walter Cronkite, we see this, you know, the mainstream media has completely went off the reservation. Fake news is a tag that they're being called. What role did Walter Cronkite play in all this?
Well, that's a great question as we talk about information operations tonight. And if you're military or former military, information operations is a term you're very familiar with. And information operations has been really performed on America. It's psychological subversion. It's an information war. It's propaganda. It's what we now have come to call fake news. But it's much, much more dangerous than just saying, well, they're putting out fake stories. There's actually a rhyme and a reason to it. There's an agenda. And Walter Cronkite is a perfect example of someone that I think was used by the communist agenda. It's a matter of historical fact what he reported about Vietnam. You can go online and type in Walter Cronkite and how he helped America lose the Vietnam War. And there are many experts that believe what he was saying about the Vietnam War, what he was reporting about the Vietnam War, did indeed turn the hearts of many Americans against winning that war against the communists. And many People can go and see some great writing by people like Cliff Kincaid of Accuracy in Media and others, where Walter Cronkite for years, even after getting off television, and remember, he is at one time one of the most trusted men in America.
And Brandon, but he was, if yeah. I can, one of the more famous quotes that Cronkite's known for since his retirement, and folks, if you have not seen this, just search on YouTube, Walter Cronkite, Satan. He made a quote about the New World Order, about Pat Robertson saying we couldn't establish a New World Order until the return of Jesus. And Walter Cronkite says, well, if that's the case, join me as I sit at the right hand with Satan, something along those lines, and was laughing and joking about it. And that's just one of several videos that reveal his true nature of what kind of person he was, the gatekeeper that he was for this New World Order system.
Well, he promoted many things that would undermine America's sovereignty. Cliff Kincaid and some other guys have written some great articles showing you the internationalism, the statism, the globalism that he was pushing, which would undermine America's national sovereignty. So, yeah, Walter Cronkite was really one of the first people to push fake news. But I believe it's, again, more insidious than just calling it fake news. It's an information operations. And it's been going on in America for a very long time. I think, quite frankly, to set this whole interview up, the best thing to do is to play a clip that I sent you guys. And let me set it up for you. This is a former KGB officer that defected, and he came to America. And in the mid-1980s, you can tell by his dress and the quality of the video we're about to see. It's an old video. It's from the mid-1980s. And you can find the entire one-hour presentation as he teaches in front of a blackboard on YouTube and watch. But he's explaining in the clips that I want to play tonight to set up what we're going to talk about, how the KGB and the communists have been involved in psychological subversion, an information war, information operations, propaganda, fake news for a long time. And that, in fact, the communists and the Marxists spent more effort and time on fake news and information operation than they did in traditional espionage, like stealing the planes, the plans for a bomber or whatever else they might try to steal that would fall under the category of traditional espionage. They only spent about 15% of their time doing that. 85% of their time, he says, was spent on psychological subversion, pumping information into the American media and into education to brainwash the American people. And it really goes to the idea of the art of war. The supreme art of war is subdue the enemy without fighting. And that's what you see has happened in America with the embracing of social justice, socialism, redistribution of wealth, fundamentally transforming America, white privilege, which is anti-American, anti-Christian, anti-capitalism, anti-family. All these things have different names, but it's communism. It's neo-Marxism, but it's been perpetrated to the point now we have what? These protesters in the street, they've gone through an educational system that has taught them that the source of all suffering and oppression is Christianity and capitalism, right? Well, how do you do that? You have an information operation for education and media, which really goes back to the Frankfurt School that we talked about last time I was on your program. But then you bring it forward to the Vietnam War from 1933 to the Vietnam War. And I'll show you a quote in a minute where one former high-ranking man, probably the highest-ranking a KGB officer, Soviet military intelligence officer to ever defect, admitted that the communists spent over a billion dollars on America and information operation to turn the hearts of Americans against the Vietnam War, which is how you have then Americans spitting on servicemen who would come home from Vietnam, spit on them and call them baby killers. Because people like, I think, Walter Cronkite helped to carry out an information operation, turn the hearts of the American people, then the politician licks their fingers, sticks it in the air, and then they pull out of Vietnam or they don't fight Vietnam like they should and win. Same thing really happened in the Korean War, and we'll get into that. But what are we suffering the consequences of today? North Korea, the communists having won. So this KGB officer explains this information operation, and I think it sets up our conversation tonight if you guys want to roll that clip.
Absolutely, Brandon. And this guy, he did another video on, it was, I think it was the four planks, destabilization, demoralization, normalization. and it's a very famous clip from the 80s. And I believe this is separate from that, but this is a very insightful clip. So, folks, please pay attention and watch this.
What I'm going to talk about now has absolutely nothing to do with the cliché of espionage or KGB activity of collecting information. See, the greatest mistake or misconception, I think, is that whenever we are talking about KGB, for some strange reason, starting from Hollywood movie makers to professors of political science and quote-unquote experts on Soviet affairs, or Kremlinologists, as they call themselves, they think that the most desirable thing for Andropov and the whole KGB is to steal blueprints of some supersonic jet, bring it back to Soviet Union and sell it to the Soviet military-industrial complex. It's only partly true. If we take the whole time, money, and manpower that the Soviet Union and KGB in particular spends outside of the USSR border, we will discover, of course there are no official statistics unlike with CIA or FBI, that the espionage as such occupies only 10 to 15% of money, time, and manpower. 15% of the activity of KGB. The rest, 85%, is always subversion. And unlike a dictionary of English, Oxford Dictionary, subversion in Soviet terminology means always a destructive, aggressive activity aimed to destroy the country, nation, or geographical area of your enemy. So there's no romantics in there, absolutely. No blowing up bridges, no microfilms in Coca-Cola cans, nothing of that sort. No James Bond nonsense. It's most of this activity is overt, legitimate, and easily observable if you give yourself time and trouble to observe it. The theory of subversion goes all the way back 2,500 years ago. The first human being who formulated the tactics of subversion was a Chinese philosopher by the name of Sun Tzu. To 2,500 years B.C. He was an advisor for several imperial courts in ancient China. And he said, after long meditation, that to implement state policy in a warlike manner, it's the most counterproductive, barbaric, and inefficient to fight on a battlefield. You know that war is continuation of state policy, right? So if you want successfully to implement your state policy and you start fighting, this is the most idiotic way to do it. The highest art of warfare is not to fight at all, but to subvert anything of value in the country of your enemy, until such time that the perception of reality of your enemy is screwed up to such an extent that he does not perceive you as an enemy, and that your system, your civilization, and your ambitions look to your enemy as an alternative, if not desirable, then at least feasible. Better red than dead. That's the ultimate purpose, the final stage of subversion, after which you can simply take your enemy without a single shot being fired, if the subversion is successful. This is basically what subversion is.
And there you have it, folks. Sound familiar?
Yeah. That's exactly what's going on. And again, this gentleman defected, and he did. He's the one that in the mid-80s went on to talk about the four stages of psychological subversion, information operations, information war, propaganda war: demoralize, destabilize, chaos, and then normalize. Mm-hmm. You demoralize. You go into a nation and you remove any morality, any values. You attack the foundational Western worldview. Well, what is that called? Multiculturalism. Multiculturalism is not the study of multiple cultures. It is a denigration of the foundational Western worldview, largely a Christian ethic and capitalism, really coming out of the second generation Reformation, many of the colonies. They fooled around with socialism. It didn't work. Bradford writes about this in his diary. They went with the biblical concept of if you don't work, you don't eat, of putting your hand to the plow, gaining wealth over the course of time. So the free market system is a Christian ethic system, and the way you destroy the family, government, economics, law, is through opposing that foundational worldview upon which a constitutional republic is based. William Blackstone, one of the leading scholars of the Founding Fathers, was asked, what is a constitutional republic? He said, well, whatever the divine is ruled on, we don't rule against. So you must denigrate the foundational Western worldview. That's how you demoralize. That is multiculturalism, which is, again, one of the things that was taught by the Frankfurt School that came here to America in 1933 that I deal with in my book, Grave Influence, that didn't get at our bookstore. And my bookstore is wvwtv.com/bookstore, wvwtv.com/bookstore, and they can get it. And that, again, was written in 2008, came out in 2009. Well, that's what the Frankfurt School wanted when they came to America, and that's what you have with this subversion or psychological subversion, is you demoralize, as this former KGB officer says in another clip. Once you've demoralized, you've destroyed any kind of foundation for morality, law, the constitutional republic, passing that on to a generation after generation, that creates chaos. So you demoralize and you destabilize. Once you've destabilized everything economically, swelling the welfare rolls, collapsing the system, you just completely destabilize society, then you have chaos. Demoralized, destabilized, chaos. We're now in the chaos. We're now in the chaos stage, I believe. And what you see going on in Charlottesville and all these other things going on in the streets and all these George Soros-funded paid protesters, this is nothing more than that chaos. And it's going to get worse, I'm afraid. There's a great article over at AmericanThinker.com today on this as well. And I believe that what you're seeing in Charlottesville and in the streets of America with these paid protesters, and I believe that's what they are, these Antifa, anti-fascists, which is so interesting because they are the fascists. Mm-hmm. They want to censor. They want to eliminate. They want to stop free speech, freedom of expression. We see Facebook wanting to mark legitimate news stories as potentially fake news when it's not. We see YouTube criticizing and putting things on our YouTube channel saying this may not be appropriate for all advertisers, and all we're doing is explaining Marxism and Islam. We see the censoring that's going on to try to stop free expression of ideas, the free enterprise system as well. So it's funny they want to call themselves anti-fascist when I believe many of these groups are indeed the fascist system, and we have emerging a big government with big business for corporate fascism. But this smells a lot like the 1930s, when you had the brown shirts, a paramilitary group, running around for Adolf Hitler, stirring up problems, beating up the opposition, intimidating the opposition. And this was the group that really helped Hitler come to power, your brown shirts, a paramilitary group of young people that were very immoral, if you go back and study their history. But this really helped lay the foundation for Hitler. They were obviously the National Socialist Workers' Party, a form of fascists as well. So anyway, today you have these people running around claiming to be anti-fascist when they really are fascist. That's always what the liberals do. They say they're something that they're not. What they say that we are is actually what they are.
Yeah, they
and
project.
So they're running around today with shields, hats, clubs, helmets, almost have a black clothes, almost a paramilitary look to these people. And they go in there and they stir up problems to create the chaos. Look for this to continue. The Democrat Party is behind it, I believe. George Soros and such groups are behind it, I believe. The Democrat Party is doing nothing to condemn it. The Republican Party is not in any way standing up with this president to condemn it. In many ways, they're going along with it. So I believe this chaos is going to continue. You demoralize, you destabilize, you create chaos. Then the government takes advantage of the chaos, rushes in with more government, implements more laws that end up shackling you and me. In fact, even here in Memphis, where I live, one of the city councils is looking at a resolution to deal with bigotry and racism, and I'm opposed to bigotry and racism, but we already have laws on the books to deal with that. And their resolution in this so-called conservative Republican town next door to me, the resolution is written so vaguely, it could mean that I can't broadcast or write or speak against Islam. And now we also have two Muslim groups working with Republicans and Democrats on Capitol Hill to make it punishable by law to criticize a religious minority. So, and who's behind that? Two Muslim groups. So what you're going to see is the chaos. Then they'll rush in, pass legislation that supposedly addresses the problem. The problem is going to be Christianity, capitalism, free market. Looking to throw the Jews in there if they can, because they're always going to have to go after the Jews. And that sets up the normalization of the prosecution, hate crime laws, and other things. Demoralize, destabilize, chaos, and then you normalize, this is now the new norm. But there was another guy that was high ranking who defected as well. This guy was probably the highest ranking Soviet military intelligence officer to ever defect, and he wrote a book called Through the Eyes of the Enemy. Here's what he wrote. What will be of great surprise to the American people is that the Soviet military intelligence, known as the GRU and KGB, had a larger budget for anti-war propaganda in the United States than it did for economic and military support for the Vietnamese. So in other words, they spent more money pumping garbage into the U.S. to turn the minds of the American people against fighting the communists. So they spent a lot of money. The anti-war propaganda cost the Soviet military intelligence more than $1 billion, but as history shows, it was a political warfare and U.S. strategic battle. So they spent over $1 billion, and it was a hugely successful campaign and well worth the cost. The anti-war sentiment created an incredible momentum that greatly weakened the U.S. military. And this is one reason why we lost Vietnam. And so what do we see now? The same thing going on. A fake news turning the hearts of the American people against the president who's trying to build a wall, build a border, deal with the illegals, deal with terrorism, deal with Black Lives Matter. There's nothing more than a communist front group, I believe. Even one of their people admits that they were mentored by Eric Mann, formerly with the Weather Underground. We now have reports. We cannot verify these reports, but we have reports that potentially some of these Antifa folks are down in Venezuela getting paramilitary training, bomb-making training, to come back here to America and carry out some of this.
And Brandon, I got to ask you this. I saw 2 months ago reports. Now, it was just speculation at the time. There was no evidence that I saw to back up these claims. But there were reports that Antifa was training in Syria. Now, whether that's people actually going to Syria and training, or if that's, you know, former ISIS or, you know, intelligence officers posing as ISIS coming back to be an Antifa, I'm not sure. But where did you get this information from about Venezuela?
Well, this came through some of my guys that are heavily tied into guys that are in special forces, and these guys were downline, special ops guys downline, downrange, and they turned around and shared it with me. And we have some other sources we're working now to try to confirm this. It may be difficult to confirm, so we're not stating it as fact, but what we are saying is we're getting some hints that that could be what's going on. Now, think about this. I don't know if you guys have the video clip. I should have sent it to you. But the Central Intelligence Agency director, the director of the CIA, he was on with Chris Wallace on Fox News recently, and he admitted that Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah are all working in Venezuela. Russia, Iran, and Hezbollah are all working in Venezuela. That's some pretty bad news. Now, if we've got Americans going down there getting paramilitary training, how to bomb-making training to come back here, that's a real problem. By the way, let me just say about Venezuela. I don't know how many of your folks know this. We've been tracking this now since at least 2014, and most Americans don't know what I'm about to tell you. I mean, you can find it. It's out there, but most Americans just aren't reading enough to know. But it's in lots of news sources you'll find if you put it in your search engine. Venezuela has been working with Iran to build a missile launching system in northern Venezuela for quite some time. We're talking about intercontinental ballistic missiles. Now listen, North Korea has just launched another missile that went 1,700 miles, flew over the top of Japan. I think that's the first time they've flown a missile over Japan now in a decade. So this thing is really ratcheting up. Now, they have nuclear, the launching system to probably reach the U.S. Peter Pry, who's been a guest of yours, a regular guest of ours, we carry his columns. Peter Pry has been saying this for a long time, along with the former director of the CIA, James Woolsey. And that should concern us. But why are we not hearing people more concerned about the fact that Venezuela is supposedly working with Iran, according to open news sources, building an intercontinental ballistic missile firing system, missile launching system, in northern Venezuela near Caracas, puts it about 1,364 miles from Miami. And now the CIA, and we've been talking about that since at least 2014. Now you have the CIA director coming out in the last couple of weeks on Chris Wallace's Fox News saying, yeah, and by the way, Iran, Russia, and Hezbollah are in Venezuela. We could be seeing another Cuban Missile Crisis type scenario, but the American people are seem to be oblivious to it. And I'm quite concerned when you have the Russians and you have the Iranian, or what we really should call Islamic Revolutionary Guard here in the U.S. Peter Pry, former CIA officer, chairman of the EMP Congressional Commission, says he believes there are perhaps hundreds, if not thousands, perhaps thousands of Islamic Revolutionary Guard members already here in the U.S. And you combine the fact that we have these very nations, the Marxists and Muslims, that want to bring down America, you now have those very Muslim Hezbollah, Islamic groups, Hezbollah, as well as the Iranians, Muslims, and the Russians, communists, all working in Venezuela. So again, we're in a big problem right now, and the American people don't realize it, because again, the news is being turned away from fighting the enemy to thinking that the enemy is really Americans, conservatives, Christians, Jewish people, with all the anti-Semitism that's rising in America. And to me, it's smelling a lot like the 1930s Germany. And sadly, in Germany, there was about 14,000 so-called evangelical pastors, and only about 800 would stand up to Hitler. The rest of them didn't want to do anything. And yet, Bonhoeffer, who was part of this movement, the Confessing Church, to go against the Nazis, they ended up hanging him with a piano wire. His pastor buddy, Martin Niemöller, they threw him into a concentration camp. He survived and ended up getting out and going and living in Canada, and since passed away. But Martin Niemöller said, look, there were 14,000 pastors. If they had stood up, those evangelical pastors had stood up, maybe only 10,000 would have died, not 5 million Jews, 6 million non-Jews. And yet, what do we see today? Instead of the evangelical pastors standing up to this movement, we have these useful idiots like John Piper. I think John Piper is a perfect useful idiot. He's supposedly on the conservative right side of evangelicalism, yet here he is tweeting, if Black Lives Matter matters, know why, from their own website, blacklivesmatter.com. And why is this so-called Bible conservative tweeting about Black Lives Matter? Here's another useful idiot, I believe. Another guy on the right, a neo-Calvinist, I believe. Matt Chandler. What's he writing about? White privilege. What's another word for white privilege? Your communist ideology, just wrapped in another term. And what does he say to the Christian Post back in 2012? He says that we need to think about our whiteness. You have to address white privilege, and white people don't know that there's privilege that we have because of our whiteness. So when they hear that they get real offended, like black people just need to get over the past and move on. And he goes on to give an example and whatnot. This is a real problem. This is playing right into the diversion, the information operation. America, bad place, European people, Christians, racist, capitalism. And yet, I believe now, instead of seeing pastors stand up to this Islamo-fascism, this Islamo-Nazism, and the neo-Marxist, the Marxists and the Muslims, many of them are playing right into their hand. Why? Perhaps maybe they're educated beyond their intelligence. Perhaps they've bought the lie of the information operation. I don't know. But you would think that even the so-called conservative Bible right could pull their head out of their armpit and start fighting this for what it is, because the goal is eventually to shut down churches and Christians and Christian radio and conservative radio. And yet, what do you see? So-called people on the right and so-called Bible right pastors using their talking points. And that's exactly what happened in Germany, according to Martin Niemöller, that 14,000 some odd evangelical pastors did nothing, and we saw what happened. So you have the players, very similar to the 1930s. The pastors don't want to say anything. They don't want to do anything largely. Some do, but most don't. You have now, instead of Nazism, you have Islamo-Nazism, Muslim Brotherhood running all over the country, which they were involved in the Final Solution of Hitler, working with Hitler in the Final Solution, Muslim Brotherhood. You have the basically the brown shirts, if you will, running around in a paramilitary group, intimidating people, beating people up, acting as a paramilitary thug group of people. And now we're moving toward a fascist system where big government, big business are merging, a corporate fascism. And now who do they have in their sights? They have in their sights the Christians and the capitalists, because that's the source of all suffering and oppression, which, by the way, all came out of Germany through some Marxist who came here to America in 1933. So maybe we're connecting some dots. I hope tonight we're helping people understand that all this fake news and the media and education has played right into an information war, propaganda. Repeat a lie often enough and people believe it.
Yep.
The whole goal is to defeat your enemy, subdue your enemy without having to fight.
No, you're exactly right. And this Antifa, you know, these people, you know, they are anarchists. But what they really are doing is through chaos, they are worshiping Satan, and they are invoking, you know, mayhem and unrest. And they are the exact definition of what a terrorist is, trying to, using violence for political goals. And we see this movement. Finally, the left-wing media is starting to call them out a little bit. And that's better than nothing, I guess. But we know that there is a overarching agenda here that is at play through what the clip that you just played, the destabilization, the chaos, and then normalization. You just talked about information warfare, Brandon. How would you define information warfare?
Well, I got an article from, I went researching this last week for my TV show. This is my TV show this week I'm giving to you guys here. And I found this article from The Military View, July to August 2011, by a brigadier general called Information Operations. And he says that information operation, he says, competently managing it is what it is, competently managing information that affects the population's attitudes and beliefs. So attitudes, beliefs. Competently managing information that affects the population's attitudes and beliefs is a decisive element of successful counterinsurgency. In U.S. military doctrine, we refer to this effort as information operations. Information operations are active activities undertaken by military and non-military organizations to shape the essential narrative of a conflict or situation and thus affect the attitudes and behaviors of the targeted audience. And so it can be used for good, going into a country that's maybe, say, you go in and you take over a country that's had a ruthless dictator and you try to win the hearts and minds of the people and maybe even some of the insurgents to come and, look, we're here to help you stabilize your government, get your people to understand how to rule and run a legitimate government, establish it, and then we back out. And so you carry on an information operation to win their hearts and minds. So it can be used for good, but it can also be used for evil. And that's exactly what an information operation is, the KGB, as we heard from Yuri talking about in the mid-1980s. And this information operation goes all the way back, really, to, as I said, education and media, the two targets the Frankfurt School set out to go about in 1933. And the Rees Commission. You guys know about the Rees Commission? Do you remember that?
No, I'm not familiar with that.
Well, there was a committee from 1952 to 1954. It was run by Edward E. Cox and Carol Rees, and it came to be known as the Rees Commission. And it came out in 1954, the Rees Commission. You can look it up online and see it for free, lots and lots and lots of pages. But there's a guy that wrote about the Rees Commission, and basically what they did was a study before it was shut down, the committee was shut down, to look at the very powerful liberal, globalist, internationalist, neo-Marxist, tax-exempt foundations and how they were trying to influence America, American public policy, education. And Joseph Douglas, writing on it, says that what they found, this committee, was that there was a growth of an insidious network of leftists under the patronage of the major tax-exempt foundations. This network had infiltrated both the education system and the government. The clear purpose of this network, or interlocked cabal, as they would call it, was to control the marketing of ideas and through these ideas to introduce social change. Change in the committee's eyes was not in our interest. It was not in our interest as a nation. Indeed, they even ended up calling it subversive. This is just like the subversive psychological warfare Yuri was talking about in that video, the former KGB officer. And how right they were. The changes being orchestrated by this cabal can now be seen to lie at the heart of the major social, economic, and political problems America is experiencing today. The findings of the Rees Commission were published in December 1954. The principal conclusion was direct and unequivocal. A cabal consisting of leftist intellectuals, social science organizations, and the big tax-exempt foundations had come into existence. Their objective was to destroy the American culture and the way of life, introduce socialist and Marxist ideas, often under deceptive garb, seize control of our government's policy apparatus, and place themselves in charge. Deep state, if you will, folks, right? He says there were two main thrusts in the cabal strategy. The first was to use the American education system to promote the desire for social change in the public's mind. That is, to change the thinking and behavior of our youth and young adults. The second was to infiltrate the government and use it to start implementing the social changes, end quote. And you know what's very interesting? Now, this was in 1952 to 54, and the report came out in 54. But in the 1980s, early 1980s, Ronald Reagan commissioned a report of the state of education. And it was called A Nation at Risk. My second book that I wrote in the early 90s was called A Nation at Risk. It was about the state of education. That's how I came up with his name. And the report, after they studied the state of education in America, it was given to President Reagan. And if anyone goes and looks up A Nation at Risk, the education report, you know what they said? That the state of our education, the mediocrity of our education, and the state of our educational system in America was so bad that if another nation had done to our educational system what we ourselves had done, we might very well consider it an act of war. We might consider it an act of war. Well, this goes, that was in the early 1980s. I think it was 83. Well, this goes back to the 1950s. But do you know what the result of this information operation and undermining our educational system and changing the worldview and values of our young people is? Well, it goes all the way back to the 1940s where this was going on. By the 1950s, we were in something called the Korean War. And there was a study done because so many of our young POWs were giving in. They were giving in. That a study was actually done. Why are our POWs giving in? And what they found is that within the early stages of captivity, 4 out of every 10 Americans died. They gave up. What they went on to find out was through the Army conducting a study, a Major William Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R, William Mayer, a U.S. Army psychologist, participated in this lengthy study. And why was it that our soldiers with no drugs, no torture, no psychological coercion were willingly collaborating with the communists? You know why? The study found out because they didn't know their history. They didn't know the foundation of our country's worldview, nor the purpose of the standing military they served in. And the communists there in Korea were using an outline, a little curriculum. The little curriculum to denigrate America was actually developed out of New York, a communist school out of New York. And the communists in the Korean War were using this to teach this garbage to the American servicemen who had no knowledge by which to refute the lies. And so they would either give up and die or actually become so demoralized they would pick up their buddy bodily and throw him out in the snow in 30 below weather when they got dysentery and couldn't stand the stench anymore. And so they fell apart. Now this was the Korean War. Of course, we lost that war, didn't we? And what are we dealing with now? North Korea. But this was in the 1950s. We had service people who didn't know enough about their own form of government and values to withstand the propaganda, the information operation, the propaganda war, the information war of the communists, and they weren't even torturing them to do this, drugged or psychological techniques. This was just simply putting information at them that was false, and they couldn't withstand it. In fact, one of the people writing for the Volunteer Army, the Chinese People's Volunteer Army, said the American soldier has weak loyalty to his family, his community, his country, his religion, and to his fellow soldiers. This report fell into the hands of the Americans. His concepts of right and wrong are hazy and ill-formed. Opportunism is easy for him. By himself, he feels frightened and insecure. He underestimates his own worth, his own strength, his own ability to survive. There is little understanding of American political history and philosophy, the federal, state, and community organizations, state and civil rights, freedom safeguards, checks and balances, and how these things allegedly operate within his own system, end quote. It goes on to say, quote, he fails to appreciate the meaning of a necessity for military or any other form of organization, end quote. That was about our U.S. servicemen in the early 1950s. And again, the study was backed up by Major William Mayer, a U.S. Army psychiatrist who did this long study. By the way, the Turks, 229 of them survived when they were captured in Korea and subjected to the same treatment, but guess what happened? They all survived. To a man, all 229 of them survived and marched right back through the gates of the POW camp and went home. Now, a lot of this is detailed in a book called None Dare Call It Treason, written by John Stormer, who's a friend of mine. He wrote this book over 60 years ago, and Ronald Reagan, he told me, used to buy it from him by the case. He knew Ronald Reagan. He met him in the 60s when they were both working with Barry Goldwater's campaign. Reagan bought it by the case, would send him a check, and he'd ship him cases of it, and he'd give it out. None Dare Call It Treason, if people can find it. That's the 25th anniversary edition, and this book is sold, by that point, 7 million copies. So he details that there. So this shows you that this goes back a long way, and it always comes back to an information operation. And that's what's going on with the American people right now. Their hearts and minds are being turned against their own form of government. The enemies of America are now the victims, the Marxists, the Muslims, social justice. And don't forget that now we have comes in not only the Marxists, but now comes in the Muslim Brotherhood. So now the Marxists and Muslims are working together to destroy America. And don't forget what the 1991 explanatory memorandum said that was found in a sub-basement in Northern Virginia. It was written in 1991, found in 2004, entered into federal trial, the Holy Land trial. What did the Muslim Brotherhood say? They said their goal was to destroy America from within with our own miserable hands, to destroy our miserable house with our own hands, to sabotage America from within by our own hands. Americans doing it.
And Brennan, the resignation of Sebastian Gorka, in his resignation letter, he talked about how the mention of radical Islamic terror was shied away from, and that the Islamic anti-American forces were, you know, still de facto controlling the White House through the Obama holdovers. One thing that Islam as a religion, as a goal, has in common with Antifa, and the way Antifa puts it, is this notion of peace through violence. Now Islam, they will, you know, convert or die, is their motto. Basically the same thing. You know, they'll have peace.
Well, they say there's no peace until you surrender. You know,
exactly.
They say there's no peace until you surrender, then you'll have peace.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, don't forget, we have one of the Islamic leaders on video saying Black Lives Matter is now our matter. Black Lives Matter is now our matter. They go on to say we had a revolution in the Middle East. Why can't we do it in America? But instead of enforcing the federal law for subversion, for the attempt of overthrowing our form of government, for treason, our laws aren't being enforced. What are people talking about instead?
Yeah.
People are talking about passing laws to criminalize those of us speaking truth about Islam. Think about that.
Yep.
Instead of enforcing the laws on the books now to deal with Muslim terrorist groups in America, Muslim Brotherhood, CARE, Islamic Society North America, Hamas, all these groups, who have openly stated what their goal is and was even entered into a federal trial, the Holy Land Experience, instead of dealing with the Marxists, the criminals, the Antifa groups that are just neo-Marxist groups, which are doing the bidding of the globalists because they don't want to dirty their hands with this, but they allow the Marxists and the Muslims to do this, they let them off the chain, they let them bring the chaos, and then you watch the globalists march in and bring in the legislation. I hope your audience understands what I just said. The globalists are using the Marxists and Muslims, letting them off the chain to create the chaos. Then the globalist politicians from both parties walk in and say, oh, we better deal with this chaos. And they start passing legislation. And it usually will criminalize and limit the freedoms of Americans as though the problem are is those telling the truth.
Yep.
This is what they're doing. And they're letting the Marxists and Muslims off the leash to do this chaos. So the American people eventually will say, I'm tired of the chaos. I'm afraid. Bring stability, and now you bring in laws that are criminalizing the good people, and you're falling right into the playbook of the bad people. So instead of dealing with the laws in the books to go after the Islamic terrorist groups in America, the Marxist groups in America, you have politicians who are buying the information operation that what we need to do is pass laws that stop any criticism of religious minorities. Islam.
Yeah.
So
and they even say, don't criticize them.
Big time. because the information operation is working. And the enemy is not the Marxists and Muslims. The enemy is now the American people who are trying to speak truth. That's who's becoming the enemy. That's who they'll bring the laws against. And eventually the American people will give up and say, oh, I just can't handle this crime and chaos anymore. Do whatever you got to do. And the globalists will step in with more laws, and they use the Marxists and Muslims to bring the chaos to then be the solution. You have to create the chaos to offer up the solution. The change comes from the conflict, Saul Alinsky.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, one thing that's interesting when you talk about an information warfare, and that's exactly what we're seeing, you know, with this mainstream media. The Charlottesville is a great example where the president came out and condoned the violence and the hatred, and then the media turns around and says he never said it. And another thing, you know, this Antifa movement, this anarchist movement, has been creating chaos and riots in this country for, you know, 8+ months now. And only after Charlottesville did we start to see the media actually call it by name and cover it in the press. And one thing that they've been doing, we have seen that they have been protecting Antifa, saying, oh, they're trying to protect the values and the fabric of America. And they even justified this peace through violence segment on, I think it was last Thursday or Friday. And I'm amazed that, you know, they are, as you said, this information warfare trying to create this chaos as a strategy from the powers that be. These people in Antifa are compartmentalized. They're just thinking that they're going to protest and shut down Nazis and you know, anything that they oppose. But what they're really doing is what you just laid out. It's a strategy of the shadow government, is to use the chaos that Antifa creates in order to bring down oppressive laws on everybody in the country and use that as a way to bring in their new world order. And that reminds me of the Albert Pike letter of the three world wars. And if you read what he talks about World War III, how it starts between the Jews and the Muslims, and then the anarchists are released, and basically there's a massive war that takes place where the Islamists, the anarchists, and the Christians are all wiped out, bringing in a one-world religious order of to worship Satan. It looks like that's the blueprint that they are using right now to bring about whatever change.
This information operation, I mean, here you have Trump who's trying to drain the swamp, but yet the swamp is in the White House if you still have H.R. McMaster, who, according to Breitbart, has endorsed a book called Jihad Peaceful, Al-Qaeda Terrorism is Simply Resistance. I mean, he's gushing the talking point of deep state Muslim Brotherhood, and yet when we try to point this out, we point out the dangers of Islam. Here comes CNN with the Southern Poverty Center now claiming, here's your group of haters, and who's listed in the group of haters? Two guys that sit at this broadcast desk, Sharam Hadian, former Muslim, now Christian pastor, and Usama Dakdak from Egypt.
Yeah.
Now they're listed on this as haters. No, they're not haters. They're just speaking truth about Islam. So what is the narrative again? What's the information operation? People who are even former Muslims, now Christian pastor, Usama Dakdak, who's from Egypt, speaks Arabic fluently. Those are now the haters, the ones speaking truth.
And Brandon, and yet, the slogan that Dave Dobemeyer uses is, truth becomes hate speech to those who hate the truth, and that's exactly what we're seeing.
Actually, you know, Herbert Marcuse, who coined the phrase "make love, not war," was a consultant of the students of the 60s, the countercultural revolution, was part of the Frankfurt School. He actually wrote in 1965 in a paper that tolerance is intolerance.
Mm-hmm.
That he said, if we really want to have tolerance, we have to be intolerant. And the ones we have to be intolerant of, he said, are those that are not for the expansion of the social welfare system, and Christians. And so he said what we have to do is deprive them of their freedom of speech and deprive them of their peaceful assembly. Don't let them assemble. Don't let them speak. If we want to have real tolerance, he said, we must be intolerant. And he labels, again, the conservatives, the Christians, the capitalists is who they have to be intolerant toward. So again, I repeat, an information operation is being set up. People are buying it because it's not based on fact, but it's based on emotion. So people are being psychologically manipulated and conditioned to believe that these problems are all the result of a Christian society and capitalism. And that's what Karl Marx said. My aim in life is to dethrone God and destroy capitalism. And so the narrative the media pushes is part of the information operation. The question is, follow the money.
Mm-hmm.
Who's paying for this? Where is this money coming from? How much is George Soros involved? Who's paying these protesters? Who's continuing to fund the education curriculum? Here in America, we played on our radio show last week audio from a U.S. Department of Education video where they're now teaching open Islam and the five pillars of Islam in American schools with a well-produced curriculum on Islam. They're teaching Islam, how to become a Muslim, how to convert.
Yep, the
prayers. There's no other religion they do that for. No other religion they do that for. Where's the money coming for that? So you have an information operation that is for generations taught socialism, social justice, redistribution of wealth, multiculturalism, a denigration of the foundation of Western worldview, feminism, anti-family, anti-father, destroy a patriarchal society. Now you have the idea of just a general humanist. This is, again, the Frankfurt School, a general humanist they said they would teach in the 1930s. They're doing that now with all the genders. So they've been at it a long time, the Marxists, the neo-Marxists, the political correct Frankfurt School guys. But now come along the Marxists who've gotten in the game, and now their money somehow has gotten them into the U.S. Department of Education curriculum, and now your textbooks in America, as we've gone through on TV, are filled with lies about Islam, painting it as something it is not, totally whitewashing Islam. And so the young people now are being indoctrinated in Marxist and Muslim ideals. And who is again being set up as the bad people are the Christians, the capitalists, the conservatives.
Yep.
And it's working, I hate to tell you, and this always starts out non-violently, but eventually turns violent, and I think that's only going to increase. And unfortunately, I'm here not to be the bearer of bad news, but to warn of what's coming. People, conservatives and Christians, are being set up.
Brandon, we are out of time. Thank you so much for joining us, folks. Brandon House, worldviewweekend.com is the website, and we so do appreciate all the updates. And I'll be following up with you, Brandon, on this Venezuela Antifa training, possibly in Venezuela, and send you the stuff I saw in Syria, because I believe this is on this. There is stuff like this going on, and we need to get to the bottom of it as much as possible, folks. Brandon House, thank you so much. We will be right back after these short messages. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to this Tuesday edition of the Hagman Report.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right? You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available. Anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night, go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. A Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. PreciousTimberProfits.com.